Chapter 16 of Greengrey Homestead by Steele Rudd. This Legomus recording may be distributed and adapted freely for any purpose. Read by Anna Simon. A couple of months have passed since Mrs. Jubal Lee and Josie King called and collected your sub to the school treat, but hardly a day has gone by when you haven't been thinking of the time you'll have. The day'll be slow coming, but when at last the morning of it does arrive, you'll be up and into your pants and boots, and out to put a fire on, and in a minute or two you'll be blowing hard into a pannikin of scalding tea to cool it, looking out at intervals for signs of daylight. Like trains and things when a man's in a tearing hurry, the dawn will be running late, but you'll give it another 10 minutes or so, according to your idea of the time. Then if it doesn't start to show over the dark wall of range to the east, you won't wait any longer. You'll go on after the cows and horses without it, and let it catch up. But it doesn't begin to show, and at last you move out into the darkness, groping your way around the yard for the track leading off into the hollow where the stock generally settle when they've had their fill. And Rover, wondering what's the matter, will accompany you. He'll have more confidence in the dark and in himself than you, and, as if making little of you as a superior being, he'll demonstrate how the Creator was more generous in his gifts to a dog than to you, for while you're mooning your way in uncertain fashion, he's scampering off into the gloom, racing through trees and brush and fallen timber for the mere joy of it. To cloak your feelings of inferiority, you'll descend to the low-down, shabby spirit of the human, and blast him, and order him away to a place you shouldn't be thinking of on a morning like this. Of course he won't go. He wouldn't desert you, in fact, just now, not if you killed him for it. So you'll grope along, trying to keep to the track, when all at once you'll nearly fall head-first over a plough-horse that's sound asleep in the long grass. Mighty! Old Nugget'll wake up as if you were someone come to shoot him. He won't be able to find his legs half fast enough, but when he does, he'll bound up and stamp round, snorting in terror. And when you lift your voice and blast his eyes, as you did Rover's, he'll gallop off, and you'll hear him thundering and blundering over things as if the devil was pursuing him. Next minute you'll hear the rest of the horses whinnying anxiously to one another from different angles, and then the lot of them, taking to their heels, will tear recklessly in pursuit of Nugget. You'll stand listening in, your heart in a flutter, lest some will come to grief in a gully or against a tree. And while following the sounds, your attention will be attracted to other noises higher up the ridge side among the loose stones. You'll turn your ear and catch sounds of cloven hoofs and the cracking of knuckle-bones and joints, accompanied by a mumbling moo. In a second you'll know it's the darned dairy herd, and that they also have taken you for an evil spirit. And when they start running, making an unearthly row, you'll grind your teeth and peer down at your feet, and round about in search of Rover. You'll feel that he's the cause of it all, and you'll want to deliver him a square, solid kick in the ribs, while the facts are fresh in your mind. And while you're peering blindly around for him, Rover will be sitting on his tail a few yards out of reach, looking at you with love and affection in his eye. A few minutes more and the grey dawn will start to break in streams of light. The dark, eerie objects about you will take shape. Rover in the flesh will appear beside you. Not 100 yards away, the dairy herd will be bunched together, staring back at you. The horses will be at the yard, and the little homestead and its familiar surroundings will all reveal themselves. It's broad daylight now, and you begin to think it's getting late, that the morning will be gone before you can get a move on. So you address a few words of instruction to the cows, and tail them along to the yard, whistling an imitation of the birds chorusing across the gully, and wondering if you'll get your work done in time. It will be surprising how soon the sun will follow the dawn, and how high it will be in the sky when you finish up at the yards, load the milk cart, attend the horses, pigs and potties and fowls, snatch a bit of breakfast, and off to the factory. You won't waste many minutes at the factory, and on the way back you'll put up a record for a horse and cart over 4 miles. You won't wait to close the gate, leaving it open for once won't matter. So you'll pull the harness off the puffing horse, pour a can of whey over the heads of the squealing swine, throw the saddle on your hack, and hurry to the house for a wash and change to your Sunday togs. Nothing is in your head now but the treat and getting there. Your laundry will be in fair order, for the Rhine woman ironed a shirt and collar for you only 2 or 3 weeks ago, and except for being speckled a bit, the collar will be white as snow. Your socks, though, want heeling and toeing. Still, when your boots go over them, they won't be noticed. And if you find you have to pull your boots off to take part in a high jump or something got up for adults, you'll decide to be careful about it and pull the socks off along with the boots. Your feet and legs will need a wash, though. The soil of the cultivation paddock is clean enough in its way, and different to the germ-laden dust of the cities. Still, it changes the colour of your limbs and makes you look askew-bald. So you'll get a tub under the tap of the tank and double yourself up in it before you turn the water on. Lord, it's so long since you were under the tap in all your nakedness that, when you let it flow, it'll fall on your humped back like a cataract of knives and needles. You'll shudder and yell, and Rover, who'll be eyeing you sideways all the time, and forming a dog's opinion of you, in the nude, will gather round the tub, barking at you. But you'll keep on shuddering and yelling, taking no notice of him, until you suddenly feel his two paws on your shoulders, his hard-worn claws scraping their way down your bare back, and his joyful bark in your ear. Then you'll howl and roar at him, and in your wrath upset the tub and yourself backwards. And when you kick the empty vessel from you with both feet and rise, you'll cast reflections on Rover's pedigree and chase him two different ways round the home with a missile in your hand. But you won't take long dressing, and with a last look round, as you lean from the saddle and pull the gate after you, you'll touch the horse with your heels and off. Gee! The feelings that'll be in your head and in your heart will keep lifting you in the stirrups as you rip and rattle along the lanes. And when you come in sight of the picnic ground, there'll be numbers of carts and sulkies and saddle-horses already there. The carts and sulkies will be surrounded by women chattering and calling greetings and questions and suggestions to one another. There'll be the working bee, and they'll be lifting out baskets of crockery and provender and opening them up. And standing off a piece under some trees will be a circle of old cronies in cropped whiskers, all shaking their heads and expressing surprise at having lived to meet one another again at the same spot on the same day that they met a year before. As you ride in through the open gate, dragging your hat over your face so that no one will see how self-conscious and uncertain you are of yourself, the local schoolmaster, with a line of boys, will be trailing a rope round, looking for a safe tree to erect a swing on. There'll be family groups, too, standing about, some of them migrants that were never at a treat before, holding each other by the hand and looking as if they felt uncertain of a welcome. Some more, mostly young couples, will come flying and crushing in behind you on dancing, prancing horses, flashing riding whips as if they were entering a show ring to pick up prizes for the best hacks. Putting your horse away in the shade, you'll avoid the women for the present, and make for the old cronies in whiskers. You have more confidence in them, and know they'll be easy to pal in with. They'll be telling each other all about the weather, how much rain they got out of the storm that broke over a couple of nights before. Though you'll be standing, listening, and smiling for quite a while, they won't notice you've joined them until you mention that scarcely a drop fell at your place. Then they'll turn to you, and shake hands with you, and ask, have you, too, taken a day off to come to the treat? And they'll think it strange that you didn't get anything out of that storm. From some of their places it looked as if it was falling in torrents over your way, like wheat coming out of a winnower. But old Haley, who was nearly flooded out, and is proud of being specially favoured by Providence, won't be a little surprised. He will remember that your part of the country always were a dry corner. After a while you'll get restless and feel a flat tire. You'll be snatching and blowing at the flies and looking across from under your hat at the women. And some of them, when your eyes are the other way, will be looking across at you. And then Bill Buck, old Silas King's handyman, in his shirt-sleeves, will drive in with Josie, bareheaded, beside him in a four-wheeler, packed behind with tins and cases of sandwiches and stuff. Without knowing why, you'll begin to feel different. The old cronies will all look up and stare, and when Josie smiles and nods at them as she rolls past like the Duchess of York, they'll feel pleased and will chorus, "Hello, Bill!" Whether Josie saw you standing there and meant those smiles for you, You're not quite sure, but her coming just when you were feeling like a flat tire will seem like an answer to a prayer. Following the vehicle with their dim eyes and watching it draw up under the trees, where Josie'll jump out and greet their wives and daughters with handshakes, those old cronies will glow with the spirit of equality. And your heart will start beating ahead of time when you hear old Bob Smith come out with, "Now look you at that, and everyone's a-saying she were stuck up." But you'll be sliding away from the old cronies, looking as if you're interested in everything but women. You won't feel valiant enough to slay a lion in a pit, but with a clothes prop you'd take on a dozen old man roos in a paling yard.
"Hello, Dick Gal, you're just in time. We want a good fire made."
You'll know it's the voice of Mrs. Jubilee, and it'll come to you like the Lord wording the Israelite from out of clouds. So you'll try and look surprised as you turn to them, grinning and flushing.
"And we want the tarpaulin put up after you've made the fire, Mr. Gall."
This will come from Josie King, who's in charge of the sandwich section, and she'll have her sleeves rolled above the elbows, and will be tying an apron on, and smiling at you. You'll get confused, the blood will rush to your face, and forgetting about the fire, you'll ask where the tarpaulin is. But Mrs. Lee won't forget, though she'll understand and see through your blushes.
"No, you don't," she'll laugh. "We want our fire first, and they can have you all to themselves after."
So, coming to your senses, you'll discard your coat, tossing it away as if you'd finished with it for ever, and there'll be a pile of wood and a fire started quicker than if it had been struck by lightning. Inspired now with the spirit of achievement, you'll unroll the tarpaulin, and when Josie, who'll leave the others to carry on, will take hold and help to push and drag it over the limb of a fallen tree, when Josie comes close to you, and you feel her breath and the touch of her soft hand against your hard one, you'll get into such a flurry that you'll be pulling and dragging the darn thing the wrong way. And how your heart will palpitate when at last you find yourself alone with her under the blessed thing for a second. But she won't seem to notice. She'll be concerned only about making a good job of it. At least, that's how it'll impress you. And just when the job's finished, and you're standing surveying it, grinning at her in expectation of the word of praise that'll mean such a lot, long Phil Ryan, a cub your own age, with spurs on his heels and flashing a riding whip, will poke his nose in and say,
"Giving him some work to do, Miss King. He can do with it. No one ever sees him working on that farm of his. Can you give me a job? There's a 7-foot snake out on the road that someone killed. Would you like me to get it and chop it into sandwiches for the working bee?"
How you will look at him, and when Josie goes off, you'll feel you could punch him. But your feelings will change when the schoolmaster calls out, wanting to know if there's anyone can climb a rope hand over hand and fasten it to the limb to complete the swing, and Mrs. Jubilee shouts back that Dick Gal can. You're not sure you can yourself, but you won't let on, so you'll grin cheerfully and roll up your sleeves. It'll seem a pretty stiff climb up that rope when you look at it, and the limb will be rotten. But Mrs. Lee said you can do it, and as no one else is competing, you'll squat calmly on the grass beside the dangling hemp, and while a mob gathers round to watch, off will go your boots, leaving your socks on. You won't think of them till you're halfway through with the climb, and while you're straining your arms and gripping with your feet and thinking about the darn limb, you'll hear them laughing under you, and the kids calling one another to look at the big hole in your socks, and their mothers telling them to shut up. It'll take a lot of heart out of you. You'll weaken in the arms, and for the moment you'll kick and dangle as if you were fighting to defeat the executioner.
"Stick to it," the schoolmaster will urge. "You haven't got much farther to go."
To you it'll seem a mile, and when you shut your eyes and set your teeth and take fresh grips, and kick your legs, getting astride the limb as if you were swimming, one of the socks will leave your foot and float down among the spectators. It will cause a stir. Old McClure will rescue it from the kids and mind it for you till you descend, and when you reach earth you'll be puffing and in a hurry to put your boots on again. Your services will be in great demand now. There'll be scarcely anything you won't be asked to take a hand in. But whether you're on the tea-buckets, or carrying round buns, or swinging the girls, your eye will be roaming round in search of Josie. You'll be wanting to keep her in view.
she'll be your inspiration and source of enthusiasm. There'll be times, too, when you fancy she's been looking to see where you are. And when big Nellie Ryan, who hasn't spoken to you for 18 months, finds you're friendly with Josie, whom she doesn't like, she'll forget her coolness towards you and start asking you things, and always running across you by accident, and getting more friendly every time. It'll puzzle you a good deal, her following you about, but of course you won't be experienced enough to tumble to what it means. After the kids and most of the adults have been fed several times on cakes and sandwiches, and it's getting near 3 or 4 o'clock, a game of rounders for the working bee will be started, and you and Pat Smith asked to pick sides. That'll be a momentous moment. Hokey! How you'll be fidgeting and intriguing in your mind to win the toss so as to make Josie your first pick and have her on your side. Your luck will be in, too. But just when you shout her name as if she was on fire, and other girls start shoving her across to you, old Silas King will come driving onto the ground with a flabby swell from the city beside him in the buggy. He doesn't drive a car. The swell has a habit of visiting the Kings whenever there's anything on in the locality.
"Enjoying yourselves, enjoying yourselves. Quite right, quite right," old Silas will mumble to all of you as he draws up to park the four-wheeler. You won't have seen much of the old Gasper since you beat him for your little homestead, and you can't help feeling that you'd sooner go and twist a lion's tail than face him. So watching his movements out of the corner of your eye as he steps out of the buggy, leaving the swell in it, you'll be consoling yourself by thinking he might have forgotten all about the land matter anyway. So, heading through the crowd, taking no notice of the ball flying past his ear, the old chap will tell Josie that he has brought Mr. Draper along and wants her to look after him and see he gets a cup of tea and something to eat. Of course, Josie will be too sweet-natured not to seem glad about it, but a colouring of disappointment will come to her cheeks when she puts down the bat. And, noticing the old chap has left you out of the nods he's given to the others, she'll call his attention to you with, "You know Mr. Gold, Papa?" A queer feeling will come over you when you hear your name from her. You'll get ready to give him your hand and welcome him to the picnic, but old Silas will only give you a sour look, then ask how you're getting on over there among the bandicoots. Have they eaten you out yet? While you're trying to recover, he'll go off with Josie to the buggy, and when you hear the girls whispering near you that he's the ugly bachelor whom old Silas wants Josie to marry because he's got money, you'll get a fit of absent-mindedness and forget which side you're on. And, though you'll be glad when the game is finished, you'll feel disconsolate when you see old Silas mooching off with the schoolmaster and leaving Josie to the other fellow. You can't keep your eyes away from them, and you'd like to know what the city dope's game is. Later, when you find it's time you are going home to milk your cows, and that city interloper is still laughing and talking to Josie as if he expected to be set to music, you'll feel a desperate urge. You must have a word of some kind with her before you go. So, after telling the others that you're off, and calling, "So long," you'll get on your horse and ride as close as you can to the buggy, heading for the gate.
"Oh, are you going, Mr. Gold?" Josie will ask, turning from Draper, and looking up at you with warm blood in her cheeks.
"Yes, must be making tracks now," you'll answer, reining up, and feeling you could hop off and strangle the swell with the silk tie he's wearing. Then, holding up her hand to you and smiling, Josie'll hope you enjoyed the day. My word, you did. And all the way home you'll reckon that everything would have been splendid only for that city swell coming in the buggy. And next day, and for days and days after, the same thoughts will keep your mind alive, and, unlike the early cloud and the morning dew, the school treat will be a long time passing away. End of chapter 16.